Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. You with Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show here, broadcasting out of Mississippi, Fresno. That's right, Mississippi, Fresno. One of these days, I'm going to have a show on why I renamed... why I renamed Fresno, Mississippi. There's a lot of people, whatever the reasons are. Give me a second. I gotta straighten this up. Ask me why did I name Fresno, Mississippi? And I think it's important now that I kind of explain why I renamed Fresno, Mississippi. It really pissed off a lot of politicians. I mean, all the way from Washington, D.C., all the way to Sacramento, all the way to Fresno, you know, different parts of the valley. It just really rubbed people wrong when I named Fresno, Mississippi. And so it's kind of funny too. You know, I like to do things. I like to have fun. But there's a lot of history that has happened here in Fresno that I feel that, you know, makes it relevant to Mississippi. I mean, if you study your history, which some of us do and some of us don't, you'll find out that how things went on in Mississippi, you know, just look at the Emmett Till, you know, case. You know, it's just a lot of stuff, you know, the stolen land, you know, that some of our Caucasian brothers and sisters did, the lynchings, the murders, you know, just a lot. It's just a lot. And so, you know, no one has never really wanted to debate me, you know, about why I call it Mississippi Fresno, but I have a constitutional right to say what I want to say. So, you know, how about that? But anyway, we're just happy to be back on the air tonight. It's been a long day for me. I got to do some studying tonight. I've been putting it off, and I have to take this test before the end of the month. So, you know, I'm a young brother trying to do some big things out here before I leave this earth. I want to make sure that, you know, I leave something for my children and my grandchildren. That's very important for me right now. You know. But anyway, we'll get more into that. But anyway, I just want to give some shout-outs to some different people. My boy, Ron McGee. And I've been thinking about you, brother. I'd like you to come on the show sometime and check us out. Maybe come on, let me interview you. You know, my main man, Tony Bullock, brother who, you know, really support me, you know, educate me. You know, just a real good brother. And just appreciate him. He's on the line right now. He's going to be hosting a show with me tonight. Shout out to Dr. Kennedy. She's flying over to Europe for a couple of weeks, and then she'll be back. Then she'll be going to Atlanta. And then from Atlanta, she'll be hopefully coming back to Mississippi, Fresno. So a lot to talk about tonight, tonight's show. Oh, we have Sister Eileen, who is going to be having a summit here. I believe next month, and getting that information out. We want to be able to support her. It's going to be virtual. And hopefully she calls in tonight to kind of talk about, you know, what her plans are at the summit. And this is for you. You know, this summit that we're doing is for you. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with us as Black people or African or whatever terminology you want to use, doing things for us, educating us. And I think right now, a lot of our children right now, unfortunately, has being educated in a Western European school system, which, you know, I just have major issues with that, because I believe that if you control the education, you know, Malcolm X said it best. You know, Malcolm said, you know, we need to control the politics of our community. You know, we need to control the education of our community. We need to control the food in our community. We need to take care of our women, take care of our children. And so, you know, I heard someone say it took a village to raise a child. And I think right now our village has been destroyed. And, you know, it is sad because, I can see, and I know I'm going off topic right now, but it's just interesting to see how Fresno operates. I feel that here in this city, that there is no respect for Black folks. I feel that economically, I see other ethnic people just thriving, you know, and they have their right to. You know, I'm not going to deny their right. You know, our Arab family, you know, they're opening up truck schools and all this stuff. They're building temples, and you know, that more power to them. Then I see the Hmong's family. They done bought the entire shopping center, you know, out on Kings Canyon. And, you know, and I look at that, you know, because I drive bus every day, and I'm like, wow, we've been here for 400 years here in this city, in this country. And I'm like, what are we on? Anyway, that's off topic. So we're going to get back to the topic. I'm going to bring my main man here, Brother Tony. Going to be co-hosting the show with me tonight. Let's see who's up on here today. Trina, hey, girl. Appreciate you tonight. Brother Kevin. Yeah, Kevin, yeah, we went to high school together. And but let me bring my main man in here. 3205, welcome to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. Talk to us tonight.
Good evening, my brother. How are you doing?
Oh, man, you know, I just left the farm, man, and I'm like, I feel like a piece of spaghetti.
Yeah, I know that move. You know. But when you're out there trying to reach one and teach one and show these young folks, you know, sometimes we have to take that extra step in order to make it happen.
You know, you were out there with me yesterday. You know, you drove behind the tractor, and you know, you had the boys in the car, and I'm sure you guys had good conversation. You know, and it's good for our young men to be around, you know, strong, you know, revolutionary, conscious brothers. You know, and because you know, we're gonna give it to them right. You know, we're not gonna sugarcoat it. You know, we're gonna tell them, you know, 2 and 2 is 4. It's not 3. And we're not going to lie to them, because we already know this world has lied to us many a times and has destroyed everything that we've tried to build. So it's important that, you know, those brothers be around you, because, you know, you have a lot of knowledge, man. I mean, you came during the Black Panther Party.
Well, you know, I one thing about me is I try to keep it real and I try to keep it correct. And one of the conversations that we had yesterday was, you know, they were actually shocked that at one time we had thriving businesses on the West Side because
right.
of what they see today. I just heard you mention about, you know, other cultures having trucking schools and shopping centers. Well, you know, the problem with us is that a divided house cannot stand.
Right.
We got this real issue of working together because we've been taught to fear one another. If that light-skinned one get more than you, they going to take everything you got. If that dark-skinned one get more than you, they going to take everything you got. Yeah, if he get 2 cents more than you, he doing better. He can't work with you. It's the mentality, man. Until we learn to work together and pull together, it will never happen. And a lot of stuff that, you know, we talk about, a lot of that falls right back on us. We got to pull it together, and we got to learn to work together in one accord.
You know, Brother Tony, remember back in the day, you know, I just turned, I don't know what I turned, 51, 52, I don't even know how old I turned, but my point is, remember back in the day how, you know, the community was a community. You know, if you need a cup of sugar, you would go next door, knock on the door, hey, you know, you got a cup of sugar, you know, some coffee, whatever, you know. Everybody watched each other kids, you know. You know, and if the kids got out of line, for whatever the reason is, they got corrected on the spot, right?
Exactly.
What happened to all of that? What happened to where we can't, you know, we chastise each other? Can you I remember times I got a whooping right on the spot by the neighbor, and they took me home, and I got another whooping.
You know, back in the day, it went down like that. But unfortunately, we reached a point to where we had a generation of folks who, basically, we had babies having babies. And we reached a generation of folks who reached this thing of, I don't want you saying nothing to my kid. Don't look at my kid. My kid do something. You need to tell me. And they would run up to the schools fighting teachers and getting in the hassles with teachers instead of trying to find out what really went on. Them kids grew up and start having kids, and they start believing that, hey, we ain't got to listen to no adults. We ain't got to, you know, what go on in my house, go on in my house. Don't nobody need to know. And what once was a strong village became a broken neighborhood. And
you know,
like I said, a house divided can't stand.
And you know, I did a lot of research and reading on the Black Panther Party and really understanding their 12-point platform that they created for our community. These are very educated young men that loved our people, and they were willing to die for our people. They took care of their women. They took care of their children. They see, and a lot of people, maybe you can talk about this, Brother Tony. The Black Panther Party, they were the one who were responsible for the breakfast program.
Yes, they were. In fact, that particular breakfast program started in one city, Berkeley, California, back in 1967. From Berkeley, California, it spread to 19 different cities. After spreading to 19 different cities where children got fed on the regular, all of a sudden, the United States government came up with the WIC program. See, as quiet as it is kept, that 12-point program that you are talking about, a lot of that got instituted into the United States government. The system that's known as welfare that has actually helped keep a whole bunch of folks, black, white, pink, and purple, afloat. You can thank the Black Panther Party for that program. You surely can.
Right, right, right. They did a lot of positive things. They really did.
They did a lot, you know, they did a lot of positive things. Back in the day, people who didn't have a way to get to hospitals, the Black Panther Party came up with their own ambulance system to get people to hospitals, to get seniors to hospitals, people who have been injured in neighborhoods to hospitals. And see, people like to think, well, you know, they only went out there for black folks. And wrong. They went out there for whoever was in need in them poor communities, black, white, pink, or purple. See, this is why the Yellow Pearl teamed up with the Black Panther Party. This is why you had the Rainbow Coalition team up with the Black Panther Party. See, as quiet as it was kept, the Brown Berets, Yellow Pearl, it was a group of white boys. They all worked with the Black Panther Party. Why? Because they were all poor, trying to make it, trying to get to one accord. When they said all power to the people, that's exactly what they meant. See, everybody likes to label everything. Well, they was the Black Panther Party. It was all about being black to a certain extent. But they also knew how to make allies. And allies will help you get over them.
Exactly. Well, we'd like to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. We have quite a few folks on the Facebook Live. Thank you for tuning in. Nancy, thank you. Sharon, thank you. The call-in number is 516-453-9086. There's a lot going on right now in the world. There's a lot. I mean, I did something today, Brother Tony, that I've never done before. I was listening to Davey D out of the mother radio station out of Oakland. I believe it was in Berkeley, I believe. And he was talking about the series of I never can pronounce that prison in New York.
Attica,
yeah. And there was a series. They're doing their fundraising, basically. And they put a bunch of series of speeches, even Richard Pryor. He did stand-up comedy, and Richard Pryor's, you know, part of the struggle too. And the brother, what's his name, George Jackson? George Jackson.
He was murdered at Soledad.
Right. And they got a bunch of his speeches, and all they were asking for $100 spot, or you could do a $10 a month for a year. Man, I called in, man. You know, because, see, it's that knowledge right there, right, that we can take and sit down our young brothers and sisters, you know, and just have a gathering. You know, I mean, we come together, man, and watch football, right? You know, we'll throw a football party in a minute. Super Bowl party, right? But why we can't throw a conscious party? You know what I'm saying? And listen to
exactly.
Our ancestors on what they went through in this country, right? To try to figure out maybe something they can say that can help us today. So I invested, you know, $100 today in buying these different series of speeches. You know what I'm saying? Because that's important that we need to build our own conscious library. You know what I'm saying? You know, get our kids off these Xbox, right? I mean, I have a kid in my, you know, a young man in my home, and I tell you, these kids love these iPhones. They love, you know, all. I mean, it's fine, but we need to give it a balance. You know what I'm saying? We need to give it a balance, right?
Well,
and
you just said the word, balance. This is what people have got to remember. You as an adult, you control that. And there has to be a balance. See, back in the day, what was it back in the day? You got up, you did your chores, you did what you're supposed to. And then the bottom line was you can hit that dough or you can find something to study. What did we do? Hit the dough and kick it with everybody in the neighborhood. But see now, they have found a way to grab their attention with these video games.
I mean, you know, today, and we're going to get into this because tonight's show is titled, Is It Important for Fathers to Raise the Boys? You know, and I'm even thinking about myself, you know, because I have a responsibility with my son, you know, and he's doing well. I'm proud of him. He's in college. He's at Southern University. He's got a 2-year scholarship, you know, getting A's and B's, and I'm proud of him. But there's some of our boys that is struggling. You know what I mean? And it's like, and that's why I appreciate the Freedom School, because, you know, we're not just a program, right? Like the Boys and Girls Club or Girls Boy Scouts, where, you know, or we just see you for 3 months and then we'll see you next year. No, we're a year-round school, right? And we meet the children where they're at. I mean, some kids come in hardcore. Some kids come in humble. They all coming in with some type of luggage. You know what I mean? And exactly. We, as the elders, we have to love them where they're at. You know what I mean? I mean, I had some kids that come into the Freedom School, very disrespectful, very mouthy, using profanity. And I had to pull them to the side, you know, and talk to them, right? Because a lot of times our young boys are angry. They're angry. They're upset. They could be angry because the father is not in the home. They could be angry because they're not getting that male attention. And if we don't, as conscious brothers, don't give these young men that space, then the streets is going to grab them. You see what I'm saying?
Well, the thing is, a lot of these kids now, the only model they have is what they listen to from a lot of these so-called rappers. Now, even as of today, rap is not what it once was. Back in the day, you had, you know, you still had hardcore rappers, but you also had conscious rappers. Now everybody is rapping about laying up with some girl, shooting at somebody, robbing somebody. Positivity is nothing that they want to talk about. Very few. And a lot of these kids, because there is no male figure in the house, and, you know, this is not a knock on women, this is what they kind of gravitate towards. You got some strong black mothers out there. You got some strong mothers, period, out there.
Oh, man. My grandmother was one of them. You hear me?
Exactly.
My grandmother was one of them.
They try to hold these young men in check, but it is hard for them.
Yeah.
So when they come into Freedom School or come over to Fame or come over to New Light, I'm that brother. When they cross my path, I'm going to greet you and meet you the way you greet and meet me. See, I'm old school. I ain't going to fake it on you. And I'm going to come correct with it. And if you think you're going to run up on me and come sideways, I'll be sideways with you. But we also going to get it straight. We're going to get it right. Because they have to learn. They have to learn about respect. They have to learn about dignity. They have to learn about being prideful in themselves, and a lot of that is what's missing.
And you know what? And in my experience working with our young boys, you know, we're natural born leaders. You know, I just believe that, and I'm not putting any other ethnic down, but I just believe even in the school system, right? I noticed that some Caucasian teachers, not all, but some that I've dealt with in the public school system don't understand the dynamics of our African-American boys, young men. And our African-American young men could be demonstrating leadership, but then the teacher will say, well, you got a behavior problem. And not just Caucasian teachers. I've seen Hispanic teachers and black teachers do the same thing, and I'm like, no, that's how we exhibit who we are, right? And I've been told by teachers in the public school system, I just don't understand, you know, why he talk like that, or why he do that, or why he, you know, and they look at it as a behavior problem, and it's not a behavior problem. That's just part of our culture, who we are. And so, you know, is it important for fathers to raise, you know, the boys? Yeah, it's important for us to be a part. You know, as I said earlier, my grandmother raised me, right? And I give her all credit. May she rest in peace.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wouldn't be the man who I am today if it wasn't for her teaching, right? Putting that old-time teaching in me, you know, how to raise chickens and how to we cook chicken every night, right? It was funny because every year we have about 100 chickens. I have to go feed them every day. And I asked Grandma one day, Grandma had a way of grabbing the head and turning it, and it would just pop off, right? And so I asked Grandma, I said, Grandma, can I take the chicken head off? And she said, go ahead. So I'm chasing a chicken around the yard. The chicken is running from me. So I finally got the chicken right. And for y'all who watching Facebook Live, so this is the chicken head right here, Bob Marley, right? And I turned it and turned it and turned it and turned it and turned it. And the chicken neck wouldn't break. And next thing I know, it was about a foot long, the chicken neck. And the eyes had popped out of all out over this stuff. And so I just laid the chicken. And my grandma came over. She grabbed the chicken.
There was a certain way to do that. Because I used to watch my grandmother. I used to feel so bad for the chicken. Because she used to grab them. And it was like she flung him twice and then flicked at wrist. And his head popped off. Boom. And, of course, you know, the body bounced around for a while, and then they threw him over in that hot pot and got some feathers off.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
See, that's the stuff, the fundamentals, right? Because, see, right now, let me say this about our people right now that I feel, and it's just me talking. In America, I don't feel in the South it's a little different, right? Because they're more, they understand culture and they understand farming. But out here on the West Coast, I think we've got very lackadaisical. We depend on the enemy to feed us. We don't understand that we need to grow our own food. We put our hope and prayer in Food Max, Costco, Walmart, Target, and whatever else, grocery store. We don't know where the food comes from, right? I was asking a young, I was in a store with a person, and I asked them, I says, you know, I had a basket full of greens and collards and carrots and celery, and their basket was full of meat. And I asked him the question. I said, well, can you tell me where that meat comes from? And I really couldn't tell him where all my vegetables came from. But I was making a point. And they said, well, no. And I said, well, do you know where the ribs come from? The tri-tip, the sausage and all? He said, no. I said, well, do you know what they fed the animal? And he said, no. And I said, well, do you know if the animal had cancer? And he said, no, I don't. And I said, well, you know, it's important to know that. Because if that animal, right, when they killed it, animals go into shock, right? And that blood, and so that's why we had to hang the chickens upside down so the blood wouldn't stay in the body. Right, because then it become poison, right? But my point is, Brother Tony, is that we can grow our own chickens if we want to, right? And we can slaughter our own chickens if we want to, right? Because then we know what we feed that chicken, right? We don't know when we go to the grocery store looking at that 10-pound bag of chicken and hindquarters, what was in it. So my point is that it's important that we, the Bible says, you know, even train up a child in the way it should go, right? And so we have to get back to the fundamentals of teaching our children and spending time. And that's why we spend so much time with our kids in the Freedom School. I mean, we teach these kids how to tie a necktie. We teach these kids what hygiene is. We teach these kids how to iron pans and what do you use starch for. We teach these kids different variety of deodorant. You know, one is stronger than the other. We teach the children, you know, why you have to wear clean socks. We teach the children how to cook and how to bake and et cetera and how to eat. We teach the children in the Freedom School. I buy all my kids suits myself, all my boys and our girls. You know, we buy them nice dresses or whatever they like. But the boys wear suits. And we teach them how to tie their necktie. And so this is the quality of time that we're spending with these young men, right? I don't have to be your biological father. And I think that's kind of where I think we're missing it at. It doesn't have to be your child, right? We as black men, we have a responsibility, right? When we see a young black African-American man, or could be non-African-American. We're talking about black boys tonight. That we have an obligation and a commitment, a dedication to care and love for that child. And I think, Brother Tony, we've gotten to this era where it's not my kid, it's not my boy, it's not my problem, that's your problem. No, it's all of our problems, because if that kid that you could give a positive word to, maybe he just needed to hear something positive from a man, might have stopped him from going out killing somebody. Because we have a lot of anger inside of us because of, you know, the neighborhood, you know, the gangs, the, you know, homes that may not have fathers in them. That male is trying to learn how to be a male, right? And our women, as you said, they did a wonderful job raising our boys the best they can. But we still need that male influence, and we got to start with them when they're young. Just like you were talking to the young man in the car the other day, you know, they were surprised you when I dropped you off, Brother Tony. The young man said, "It's a man. It's a Brother Tony, hip."
Hey, my thing is, I tell everybody I was fortunate because I had my dad, I had my uncles, I had my great uncles, but I also had a host of old brothers in that neighborhood who had no problem. If you was out there clowning, coming out they door, come here, boy, let me holler at you. And they'd break it down for you. And if they had to lay hands on you, they'd do that too. But see, right, this is what we grew up with. You know, one of the things with us is, it's not that on the West Coast that people got lackadaisical. The West Coast is a lot different from the South. What you have is a lot of people move out here from the South. And before they floated down to Central California, they hit Northern California, they hit Southern California. They hit Southern California because Southern California decided to open up them air plants. You had Douglas Aircraft down there at the time. You had Hughes Aircraft. And what they started doing was hiring. Now, they hired black folks, Chinese folks, and they worked just like everybody else on them factory lines. In fact, for black America, that was some of the best jobs they could get at the time. Compton at one time was just like being down south, because you still had folks raising chickens and hogs and horses and pigs, everything in their backyards. But as things started to change, you know, generations start to change. Now grocery store chains are becoming popular, and this is where, what, I ain't got to go out there and kill something? I can just go to the store and get it? That's where that come from. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, but what we do, we trying to show them, hey, there is an alternative. And there's also an alternative in learning. You know, yeah, they out here in a school system that's not built for them, but this is where we come in at. You know, this is where we come in, talking to them, teaching them, getting at them. So we have to make it work the best way we can right now, dealing with these different systems. This is why it's important to hit these Zoom meetings when the school board get together, when city council gets together, when county commissioners get together. We got to get back these planning commissions. We have got to get back to getting in on these people, because if we don't, they will start making all these rules and changes, and you'll have no idea what's really going on in the city that you pay taxes in and live in.
Well, you know, I've been an entrepreneur all my life. It was unfortunate that I was really at the peak of my construction company at one time. I mean, really bringing in, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 checks every 2 weeks. And, you know, people have crises in their life, you know. I ended up getting a divorce and, you know, kind of losing everything. And, you know, but I still have that fire in my belly, right? And I believe that fire came from my grandmother. That even though I lost everything, in my heart and my spirit, I feel that I'm going to get it back, right? I haven't gotten it back to where I had it, but doors are opening, right? And because I always felt and feel that, you know, I want to hire my people in my community, you know.
Right.
I want to be able to provide jobs, you know, health care, get contracts, to be able to sustain and be respected, you know, in our community. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm going to tell you what somebody told me one time, Doc. He said, Harris, I want to tell you something. He said, but, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful. I said, no, just say it. He said, you know, I find it interesting that our young people in our community, he said, we have churches like 1 minute, 2 minutes from each other in West Fresno. And he said, and the churches can sell Jesus. I mean, the preachers can preach and the choir can sing, and they can do all that stuff to the best of their ability. And I said, yeah, they do. He said, but those same young people that go to that church every Sunday and their grandma and mother tied into their church, that church cannot offer no employment to those young people. And those young people have to go to someone else's community to get a job. But our own community here can't provide nothing but Jesus. That was deep to me, you know. And I was like, wow. We do have
a true statement, but you have to look at the way. You know, it's a true statement, but you have to look at the way Fresno was designed. The city council in Fresno never, ever, ever, ever wanted to put anything worthwhile on the west side. They thought they did something big when they put that Food Max down there. And if you notice, every time a worthwhile business came along and actually did well on the west side, they found a way to close it up or shut the doors. I will never forget the days of Fresno redevelopment. And the only thing Fresno redevelopment did was make sure that everything got redeveloped right out of the neighborhood. There was a method to the madness. There was a method to the madness. Right where we got those acres where we were planting the other day. You notice the packing houses right behind us, okay? That's what they want to turn West Fresno into, packing houses and trucking firms, and zone everything for some kind of big business. There is no reason why in the world, the way it look out on the north side of town, why West Fresno, over the decades, couldn't have got the same treatment. There was no reason whatsoever. But see, after a certain group died off, and for a while there, there was a group that went to city council meetings, going down there, raising hell, wanting to know how come we can't get a business? How come we can't get theaters? How come we can't get shopping centers? And then after they passed away and moved on and went elsewhere, you got that next generation that come in wanting to make a deal. We started getting city council members that go down there. Well, you know, if you take care of me, I'll take care of you. I'll make sure that certain stuff don't happen. And, hey, we'll just call it a push. You know, let's just tell the truth and shame the devil.
Right.
Instead of looking out for the neighborhood, they was looking out for themselves.
Exactly.
So,
well, you know, I just want to give a shout out to towards the end of the show. I want to thank Brother Tony Bullock for co-hosting the show with me this evening. He's been a very, very big help supporter when I ran for mayor last year. He was one of my advisors. And I just want to really I believe in giving folks their roses while they can smell them. And he's just real down-to-earth brother who's always trying to help, always trying to empower people, always trying to have a good word, you know, with folks. I don't have all the answers. I know you on live stream don't have all the answers, but together, let me show y'all something right here. See my hand right here? See my hand? I got five fingers. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got five fingers. Now, I'm going to show you something real quick. If you were to just do your hand like this, y'all do your hand like this, just real quick, your hand like this, just open it up. And I want you to move it like this. It's kind of like, you know, just open. You got wind going through. Now, I want you to take your baby finger and pull it in, and then the next finger, and then the next finger, then the next finger, and then your thumb. Now you got a fist. Now I want you to move your arm. See, now you got some leverage and some power right now. Okay, this is why when you see me march or you see me doing public speaking and I put my hand, when this fist is balled up like this, this means power. Okay, and we still have power, right? We're just not really understanding how to use the power collectively to build our community. You know, I know black people live all over Fresno now. I know some of you would never, ever live in West Fresno. I get it. I understand it. And if that's your choice, fine, right? But at the same time, if we all leave the hood, if we all leave the hood and abandon the hood, who's going to take over the hood? Who's going to buy the hood? See, we have to come back and buy our own hood back. Because if we don't buy it back, someone else is going to buy the hood, and they're going to put what they want to put in our hood. Okay? So somebody has to stay. We all just can't run out the corral, right? Why? Because our ancestors, my grandma,
who came here from Arkansas in the 50s, she paid taxes here in West Fresno. She worked in West Fresno. Okay? She was an activist in West Fresno. Okay? Now, all her hard labor of paying property tax and this and making sure that we had street lights and garbage service and da-da-da-da, and all of a sudden, I get an education, and I go to Fresno State, I get me a BA, a MA, a DR, whatever acronyms you want to do it, and all of a sudden now, I'm too good to live in the hood that took care of me when I was a little snotty kid. And I get it. Everybody says, well, I don't want to live in West Fresno because it's a lot of crime and a lot of shooting and da-da-da-da-da. And I say, okay. Let's go to the police department and look at data. And you will find out here in Fresno, Mississippi, Fresno, that there's more crime in North Fresno than it is in West Fresno. The problem is that the oppressor owns the media. They will put out what they want to put out to make you fearful of our land here. But statistic-wise, in this city, there's more crime north of Shaw. But many of you don't even know that because, you know, you drive to River Park and, you know, they got all this and all that and the movie theater and Best Buy and Famous Days and da 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 da. But why you won't build up this side of town? Why? We got the land. Why? Why you want to build this side of town? So those are the things that I talk about. I think about, you know, being a civil rights leader, you know, speaking truth to power. These are the things, as you said, Brother Tony, that we got another caller here. I didn't see that. Let me see who this is. Maybe this is Sister Allen. I'm not sure. 3997. Welcome to Dr. Ed's Black Lives Matter Show. 3997. Welcome to Dr. Ed's Black Lives Matter Show. Okay. Maybe just tuning in and just listening. That's okay, too. And, but... we're not new to it. We're true to it, okay? And, you know, we're going to do whatever we have to do to help our young men, right? Because, you know, a lot of them were grandfathered into the situations that some of them are in, right? You know, we as parents, my son, when me and his mother got a divorce, he had no control of that. Okay. He's stuck in the middle of something that he had nothing to do with. But thank God that God allowed him to find his way, right? You know, I talk to his mom still, you know, still chop it up here and there. And he's successful, you know. And I want to see all of our children successful, right? But it's a process. But it's a process that they're going to take all of us to rebuild this village that's been torn down. What Allen's number is, let me see. 3997, coming back again, 3997.
Hello, good evening. I know we're at the end of the show. I just want to say, I've heard people say when they leave West Fresno,
hey, girl, how you
and
doing?
They go south, like going toward L.A., Bakersfield, or they go north to the Bay Area, Sacramento, that it looks like a cloud, a heavy-looking cloud over the side of West Fresno. So I just want to say, I believe West Fresno is under anesthesia, and everybody is high or deadened to what's going on over there. Because everybody got to see the same thing. You might not see it the same way, but you have to see that there's no progress. in West Fresno. There's no life in West Fresno. There's no employment. There's no joy. There's no goings and comings. Our young people have nothing to do in West Fresno. And they always seem to have an excuse, because I've heard all my life that I would ask is that it's not zoned for certain things. But how does things get zoned? By going to the zoning commission and zoning. You zone the other stuff. So it's zoned for what it's zoned for, which is holding us under a heavy, heavy cloud and keeping us to a point to where there's really no movement, there's no activity, there's no life, there's no commerce. You know, we got the West Side has that one little store, Food Max. Where is the Winco's? Where is the Food Co? Where are the Dee's? Where is the Ross? All that land is agriculture. No, it's not. They're not even growing crops out there anymore. So I just wish they would tell the truth. Because what I have always learned is that if you tell the truth, then the truth will set you free. Plus, it'll make a person realize, well, they don't want us to have anything. You could come to a honest and conscious decision. And then you can move on, because I'm not the land owners. I don't own no land. And it's probably a shame that I don't, but I don't. I would like to acquire some on West Fresno. But then they'll want to tell me what I could put there or what I can't put there or what you could do or what you can't do. It's just the oppression. It's the oppressors doing what they do. But they don't do it to anyone but West Fresno, because we still have, and I'm going to say it the way they said it back in probably 1820, we still had a house niggas and a field niggas. And that's just the honest to God truth. And the house niggas is still going along with the masses and still allowing West Fresno to be dried up, unproductive, and they don't care, because they still get to eat the crumbs off the master's table, and they still get a little extra something, which I don't know what that is, a pat on the head, a good job or something. But the people that really care, it seems like they're few, far, and in between. And like you said with the fist, if it comes together, it's powerful. But even the few people that come together, I think they just lose hope. Because who are they coming up against? You're coming up against your own people. You're coming up against people that ancestors and grandmothers, like you say, Reverend Harris, have struggled and bought property and, you know, did the best they could and left something for you to work with, and you sold out. They sell out, sold out. I feel like it's really over. I really do, because I've seen the growth in Fresno. So if you could grow it, why can't it grow over there?
Sister Crystal just made my point. She just made my point. Everything I had said earlier, Sister Crystal just came and put the exclamation point on that part.
So I just feel as though the people that can make decisions, they're making them. But it's not for the good of that community. So we can't keep saying, oh, why are we not doing this? Why? It is people making decisions. They're just not making ones that's going to benefit West Fresno. And the people that's going along, they going along to go along to get along with the okey-doke, period. Because
exactly.
If you could put a store on the corner of Blackstone and McKinley, or you could build a whole apartment complex right there by the railroad tracks, why can't you put anything on West Fresno like a grocery store, some supermarkets, a strip mall? Tell me that. We still got the little mom-pop stores that's about to fall apart. The little store on the corner, Kearney Market, the fruit stand.
Exactly.
That's pitiful. It's pitiful. It's pitiful. But I say, and I'll say it again, it's not really city council. It's the people that have an input in city council. They're inputting to just keep it like that. We don't care. We got a nice house. We're making it. We got a nice figure job, and, you know, we're educated. we're all for it, you know. Just go on and build it up over there. Even the east side got more things going on than the west side, going towards Clovis. So it's because that's what they want. And we do have people that may want something different, but the ones that's in the clique, because they got cliques, the clique people, they're the ones that have a controlling interest, and their interest is for what's going on because it's benefiting them. When things start benefiting all, then we'll win. It can't benefit one or two and not the whole community. And that's all that's ever been going on in West Fresno. And I was born here, left and came back. So since I was able to see what's going on, it's always been the same.
My grandmother used to walk to work. We had nice stores. Let me be devil's advocate for a second, right? So we know, I'm going to use the word old-timers. You know, there was Michael Keel, there was Deacon Foster. You know, those were my mentors when I was getting involved in politics and community work, which I still am. They fought very hard, and there's a lot of people names I don't know, to push that shopping center there. As you said,
the Kearney Palm Market, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And they have died on now. They're gone. You know, hopefully they made it to their destiny. But they're gone now. And they have left the remaining of their work in our hands right now, right? And it's like, it's one thing to say, well, you guys have no land to build nothing on, so that's why we can't do nothing. But that's not true. We got land everywhere over here, right? And it just seems, as you said, Sister Crystal, that I remember when East Fresno didn't have nothing over there. It looked just like
exactly.
West Fresno.
Exactly.
And you go over there now on Kings Canyon, they got brand new houses, shopping center malls all the way up going towards
They have a Save Mart. It's very few areas of Fresno that have Save Mart because that's not a Winco or a Foodco. It's a Save Mart, which is a different chain, a different brand of store,
right.
You know, a little upscale. They have one of them on the east side. Fresno, West Fresno don't have, we don't even have a Winco. We don't have
exactly.
a Foodco. We should have more options.
So here's my question. Now, what we do have a lot of is something called churches.
And liquor stores.
Every other corner and liquor store. I always thought coming up.
No, package stores.
That the church was part of the community. It was pumps, right? Life, righteousness, joy, hope. And in my little bitty mind, I'm thinking that, well, why is it so difficult? Because I remember as a child those old time preachers like Reverend Garrett, and I can't think a lot of their names.
Mount Pleasant, and
the ones that at Pearly Grove. I can't think of all their names. Those pastors came together on a united front. I remember seeing that. Right, and when there was an issue that went on in the community, the pastors came together on a united front representing their institutions, right? And but today I just don't see.
But let me tell you, the West Side churches don't have no power, and I don't know, and I'm saying it, and I hope the Lord don't strike me down. This is my opinion. I could say what I want to say.
Now,
I can use my opinion, and I can think for myself. They don't have no power because, yes, I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. It's too many of them, for one, and they're like fighting amongst themselves to still exist when that's not what Jesus wanted. That ain't what he came for. That's not what God had intended. He said it's one God, one body, one union, one church, it's one. But we got 15, and none of them come together as one. You understand? They're all individual in the body of Christ. So that leaves you without power. Just like you said, the fist, just five fingers balled up, is more powerful than if you slap somebody with an open hand. So if all these churches came together and stood for each other, which was supposed to be Jesus Christ and for the truth, the gospel, the message, if they all came together and did that, that would be powerful. But you know what? I'm going to tell you, that church that sued the city or sued the state because they said we had to close down for COVID, they said, no, that's not so, whatever, whatever, and they sued them. Because whoever's in that church stood together, and they were powerful, and they went through the forces that be and did what they did, and I heard that they won. But
that was Pastor
Cornerstone. Yeah, Cornerstone. I know. Yeah. But I just don't like to put people's names out there because I don't know the repercussion and I don't know all the ins and outs. So I don't want to say things, you know, that could cause a backlash on me. But I'm going to say what I know to be my truth, and I'm going to speak clearly about the things that I have seen and experienced, and I see that it's too many churches. And the churches that we have, it's no power. If they had maybe two or three churches and everybody that had congregants went to each, you know, church or they visited or something like that, it may do some good. And the church buildings, they could use them for housing. They could use it to feed the homeless. They could use it for the elderly. They need to turn some of these churches into rest homes or something, but, or turn it into not community centers, but turn it into centers for resources. Turn it into jobs for these young men and women. Turn it into something for these guys. They're not going to be in prison forever. The county jails, the prisons, they don't work. That's not rehabilitation. That's housing. That's putting a person away, getting them off the street so you won't see them. You don't have to be bothered with them. But you're not working with that individual as a human being. Some of these churches need to turn into centers for that. Social justice. Learn how to help them to deal with conflict outside of killing and fighting and shooting it and being mad about it. They mad about a whole lot of stuff, but no one has a center. Nobody has a self-help program. No one has an entryway for them to come in and explain what's going on. So maybe one of the churches over there in the north side of Fresno, West Fresno, but I mean down in the country, because our kids have, and I'm saying our kids, I mean our young men that have these territorial issues, they would need a center close by them, because if they came over to the other center, they might get shot until they learn how to live together. They don't know how to live together or separate.
And you just covered it, Sister Crystal. 15 churches, okay? And instead of 15 churches getting together, 15 churches are pulling in 15 different directions.
Yes,
but for their own purpose. But like you said, you have some who will stand together. You have some who done
That's clicks.
Exactly. You got some who done sold out. You got some who out there clicking together. And you got some who, as long as they get what they need, they don't care about everybody else.
Until it happens to their family.
Until it affects their child.
Exactly. Until it affects their housing.
Until their car gets shot up or something.
They want everybody to go to jail. But that's not the answer, because you're not addressing the issue. The issue is all these guns that I believe sometimes the police puts back on the street, because I know for a fact people could go to jail with a gun, get caught with a gun, they take that gun off the street, and they let them kids get out.
Exactly.
They be back on the street. I don't know if they snitching, as these kids said. I don't know what they doing, but I know they back on the street.
Well, the thing
is, like a revolving door, but that only happens
with
some.
It's like a revolving door. You said it exactly. It is like a revolving door. It is, you know, what happens is, okay, we got you. We got the gun. We don't need you no more. We're going to put you back out there. But we're going to watch you, because we'll watch you and then get somebody else.
Exactly. You going to leave me to somebody else, or you going to go get another little gun, and then we'll be able to get that one too, or you done said such and such and such and such, so you working with us a little bit to get you out of the jailhouse for a little while.
Right.
But it's just, it's pitiful because while they're doing that, and these people have funding for this, these churches or centers, they should be having some programs that's court ordered for these young men when they get out that jailhouse, when they bail out, let them out. They should be court ordered to go to some type of class to find out what is going on with their psyche, with their mind, with their hearts, and see what it is that's causing them to do these things. Why do they
exactly.
feel like this? Why do they feel like it's no hope? If you could spend all this money to keep them locked up, why can't you spend some money to find out how you can really help them when they're out here?
We know.
Why can't they be?
We know.
Remember the court programs? They had different things that was really pretty good, you know.
Yeah, well,
but if you're in trouble and you're going to go to prison, so you sign this waiver. Instead of me going to prison, I'm going to go to so-and-so's church. I have to go to Sunday service. I have to go to a Wednesday night Bible study, and I have to go to a, say, a Get Right class or, say, a men's study on Tuesday.
But unfortunately, a lot of, you know, they got away from that. Politics got
because
involved,
they don't want
they
that.
So,
just like they don't want the West Side
so
to be developed into a proper civilization. They don't want it.
You know,
yeah.
Judge Goodwin, when he was on the bench, he would, I remember with my uncle, William, that he would assign young black men to St. Rest so that,
yep.
that he would give them an opportunity and the pastor and the brethren there to work with the young people. And that's the direction that we're going with the same, the church that I pastor, because it's important that we have resources and an opportunity instead of prison or juvenile hall or whatever the case may be. Because these are our children, you know? These are our babies, you know? First, I want to ask you a question because you're a mother. How can we as men better serve, from your perspective, our young black men?
You have to hang in there. Okay, this is what I see. Because I raised men, young boys, by myself with no man, no male figure in the household. They had a father because you got to have a mother and a man and a woman to get here. So they had the person that helped them be conceived. But as far as the direction, the guidance, the love, the discipline, they didn't have that. They only got that from me or the streets. So once they meet someone that's different, that is putting good things or want them to see something different in life, you have to hang with them. It's a man's responsibility to show a boy the way to manhood. The boy shouldn't have to want to hold on your hand for you to teach them. They may not want that. But what is the man's responsibility? The man's responsibility is to get in that young man's face and tell him, you may not want me here, but I'm not going nowhere. You understand? I came here to help you to get to the point that you're trying to get to, which is from A to B. And I'm going to give you some tools, and I'm going to come every other day to see how you do it. I'm going to check on you. You know, I'm going to see if you're going to school. No, you cannot just say, well, if when they're ready, bring them back. They may not never get ready. They don't even know what get ready is. Do you understand? They need a man to be a man and say, no matter what, I know you might shut down. You might tell your mom to say you're not home, or you may not come out on Tuesday when I come, but I'll be back on Thursday. You know what I'm saying? You have to check in because you're the man. You're the adult. You're the person that's working to help this young person become a man, whatever it is they're going to become. Some people have said, oh, well, you have to give me 100%. You have to be ready. And I'm like, this is a lost kid that don't even know what ready is, don't know you, standing here being vulnerable, however it's happening, if it was forced or by choice. And when you get ready, call me. Come back when you get ready. So when they walked out the door, they never came back. And the person that told them all of this never called and checked. So I feel as though if you're going to be in a young man or a young lady's life, you be in the life for a period of time. You have to commit. You have to say what you're going to do and do it. And if you can't do that, leave that child alone. Because most of them are already broken. They're already coming from either a one-parent household. Most of the time, right, I see now is the dad is dead or in prison. Some fathers are there, but the mothers may be a mess. Or it could be a two-parent household, and it could be running smoothly. Praise God. But I see a lot of broken, devastated, destruction, just disarray. And I know it don't have to be that way, but it is because nobody takes the time with our young men to tell them, look, I'm going to be here for 6 months every other Tuesday, and I'm going to check on you. Is that okay? Would you like that? Would you want to come over here with me on Wednesday? And they may say no for a long time because they never had it. But I bet you they would appreciate that this man that I see, he's not a gang member. He's not a drug dealer. He's not messing with my mom. He's not just talking to me because he's with my mother. You know, he is really here because he's interested in me. And he's trying to get me to be interested in myself. You know, sometimes it takes another person to get you to care about you or an awakening.
You know, oh, yeah. You know, when I used to work probation in Southern California, one of my biggest problems was not the kid that I worked with, but was that mother. Because a lot of times they bitter. And their problem is, no man has ever done right by me, so I know you're going to dog my child. I used to get this all the time. I remember I was working with a young man in Pacoima. And his mother's hang up was, oh, well, you only trying to do this because, you know, it's going to look good for you. No, ma'am, I don't have to try to look good for me. I know I look good. But what I'm trying to do is keep your son from becoming another statistic.
Mm-hmm.
And that end up behind bars or 6 feet under. Once I got that kid to understand that he didn't have to follow in his daddy's footsteps, in his brother's footsteps, this young man came from a family where every male member had been a gang member. He thought that's what he was supposed to do because that's all he had seen. That's all he knew.
And that's what I said in a church one Sunday was, it's not a generational curse if you believe in Jesus Christ. Even if you're just a praying mother that's saved, then you know that the curse is broken once you got saved. But it's a generational choice. This is what they've seen. This is what they've been around. So for generations and generations, this is what has been coming down through their bloodline, and they're just another product of what they've seen. But you can change the scenario. You can change the narrative. That's what change is about, doing something different that's never been done. Some of these kids ain't never even been outside Fresno. I'm going to tell you an example. I talked to my grandson tonight, and I said, I'm going to a comedy show in Sacramento on Saturday. He said, you know what, Granny, I ain't never been to a comedy show. Ain't that something? I said, it's a lot of stuff you ain't never did. 23 years old. He ain't did nothing. But he locked up right now. And been locked up before. He done did that before two or three times. But never been to a comedy show. Never done, you know, just simple things. So what I'm saying is we have to expose our young girls, young boys to something different. I don't care where they come from. Everybody come from something. And the ones that was exposed to something different, then they had some choices and options. If they don't see no choices or options different than what they see every day, then what they going to do what they see every day?
Exactly.
And I know you have to make a conscious choice. That's what I was telling my baby today. I said, every choice you make in life, you have to live with, period. I gave her a little talking to today because the kid that got killed in that car wreck, I know we ain't supposed to be on this call this long, that got killed in the car wreck is a friend of my niece's. And the little boy would have been with them too, but his mama told him he couldn't go, and he listened. So the mother was on TV saying she talked to her daughter at 10 o'clock. But at 1 o'clock in the morning, she's in a car wreck that killed her. And the little boy jumped out the car and ran, and somebody else ran. Five people were still pinned in the car. They said it was seven people in this little car. But my question to my baby was, if she talked to her at 10 o'clock, what did she tell her she was doing, riding around in the car? Or did she say she was at her friend's house? You see what I'm saying? So the daughter made a choice. Yes, the mother is mad at the driver of the car. You killed my baby and jumped out and ran. But your baby made a choice to be in that car. So I was telling my children, because I believe God has really worked on me. And even when it hurt, you have to tell them the truth. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you do.
You have to tell them the truth. It might hurt me. It might hurt them. It might hurt your feelings. But if it's the truth, we're going to heal from that. But when you keep this lie going and all this confusion, it's a mess. So the mama mad at the little boy that jumped out the car and ran. I guess because she can't be mad at her daughter because she dead. It's a mess. I feel so bad for that mother. Have to bury her little 15-year-old daughter. And one of the boys, they say, is paralyzed. And the other one, they say something wrong with somebody's brain, bleeding on the brain. It's too much. That's why I be so scared for my baby to go anywhere.
Again, free will. They know better. You have taught them better. But it's one thing that God has given us is free will.
Yep, and choices. You make choices
and
every
choices.
Day.
That's where that free will comes into play. And like you said, right or wrong,
are you?
Pastor, take it over.